Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, in the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Well, we're back. Still no NBA basketball. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen until Thursday, but we have plenty to discuss for you guys today on Locked On Bulls. We want to dive into actually kind of a funny story about Kobe Bryant to lead off the show, but also want to get into Matt's thoughts as well as comparing what you think Zach LaVine might get paid this summer and trying to figure out exactly what the gauge of the negotiation that's going to go down this summer, how much Zach LaVine might end up earning, and whether or not this is potentially going to help or hurt the Bulls, and sort of just find out the range of what his payment's going to be. And
Gar's going to offer him 4 years, $44 million, just like Jimmy Butler.
So we'll get into that, and then all, of course, our Tuesday segment, as always, in this week in Bulls history. I have a good one for that. So to kick off the show, Matt, I wanted to talk to you about this story that kind of slid by us yesterday when we were talking about the All-Star game and everything that was going on with All-Star weekend. But this from TNT's NBA All-Star weekend, it was from the Players Only segment that they do on TNT, and it was Kobe and Shaq sitting down and kind of talking about the end of an era in the Lakers, with the Lakers, and how things kind of split there. It was a pretty cool conversation, but there was actually a Bulls tie to it too that made headlines, and apparently the Bulls were all in on Kobe Bryant after 2004, and leading up to the point where Shaq had put in a request for a trade with the Lakers, the Bulls were pretty much set in stone to land Kobe Bryant in 2004, in the summer of 2004. So
2 days later, me and Lil Sharif and Mimi, we had the counter, Mulholland State, eating Frosty Flakes, and I hear Mitch Kupchak say, "We will be taking inquiries on Shaq." I just dropped the poster. I'm like, what? So I jumped in the car and I came down here to see Mitch. The cops was already waiting for him. Can't come in here, Shaq.
Yeah, the cops waiting for you. Huh?
Yeah, because he knew. Because I was coming out here to choke his ass. I was going to choke the air out of Mitch.
See, you know, the thing about that is I didn't get any of that because we were looking for homes. Right. We were actually looking for homes in Chicago, researching schools, places to live.
So that was true, you were going to go to the Bulls?
Yeah. There was a story in ESPN, I think it was ESPN Magazine, and they asked you a question about me and Penny. And you said that we're essentially the same. And I looked at that and I said, no, we're not.
But I think you took that the wrong way because of all the misquotes and all the bad stuff.
I probably did. And I probably used his motivation too.
Yeah.
Saying, listen, if this is the conversation, I don't want this conversation. When I retire, I don't want people to say, okay, he only won because of Shaq. As unfair as that is, Magic never won without Cap, right? Michael never won without Scottie. So, but here I am getting stuck with this argument, which is not fair, but yet this is the argument people will make, and I'm not okay with that. And so therefore I knew, okay, I gotta go.
I had actually heard that, but I didn't believe it.
Oh yeah.
So. Oh,
okay. Oh, yeah. So, we're looking for places in Chicago, man. We're flying up there to meet with Reinsdorf and
you
Paxson.
You want to leave sunny California to go to cold ass Chicago.
Vanessa signed off on moving out to, I think it was Lake Forest, I think it was, Chicago. And went on a vacation to Italy. I got a phone call. Rob Pelinka called me. And he said, Shaq just requested a trade. I was like, well, there goes Chicago. There's no way the Lakers are going to lose me and Shaq in the same year.
What did you think about that story about the Bulls losing out on Kobe Bryant for a not only once, but now twice in a span of 4 years?
I mean, I started thinking back to, all right, well, who was around that Bulls roster back then? And could they, led by Kobe, have been good enough to contend for a title? And the early 2000s seems so like 2003, 2004, 2005 roster. You had, you know, the Twin Towers and Chandler and Eddie Curry. You had a young Luol Deng. You had Chris Duhon. You had Ben Gordon. Of course, you had Captain Kirk. Some other role players like Nocioni, Gennaro Pargo. I mean, it was a decent team. It wasn't a great team by any stretch. But it's a fun game of what if to play. Obviously, it's kind of frustrating to think back to all of the other near misses the Bulls front office has gotten as far as landing those big name free agents or big name stars in trades in the post Michael Jordan years, the post dynasty years. They came very close to landing the entire trio of Bosh, Wade, and LeBron in 2010. The only thing they would have had to do to make that happen was move Luol Deng, and they couldn't facilitate a trade to make that happen. They miss on Carmelo in 2015. The list goes on and on. So, and this is one of two instances where the Bulls almost got Kobe Bryant, and in his prime still Kobe Bryant. I mean, 2004 Kobe Bryant, my God, he was still winning titles with Powell and the Lakers in 2009 and 2010. So if they had managed to bring in Kobe and then sign him to an extension in Chicago in those mid-2000s years, can you imagine who else they may have gotten to come and play with him? Could have been another dynasty. I also did think back to the point that, so this happened in 2004. I'm fairly certain it was 2003 when that whole Kobe Bryant rape thing came out. The instance with that woman in some Colorado resort or whatever. Mm-hmm. There was an investigation and a lawsuit and all that stuff. And there was never, I don't think he was ever actually criminally charged, or was he, and then found innocent. I can't remember how that story went, but I mean, when I was an avid NBA fan trying to cheer on my baby Bulls in the early 2000s, still staying on that Bulls bandwagon after the breakup of the dynasty, I hated Kobe and the Lakers. Like, it didn't matter who was playing them in the playoffs, even if it was like Chris Webber and his Sacramento Kings with like Mike Bibby and that crew. I was rooting for anyone other than Kobe and Shaq and the Lakers. I hated them. And maybe there was that element of, all right, well, Kobe, you know, maybe he's not guilty of rape, but he's certainly guilty of adultery. And I certainly lost some respect for him because of that. And I just, I don't know how excited I would have been as a kid in 2004 getting Kobe Bryant to the Bulls. It would have been, wow, we just got probably at the time the best player in the league. But it certainly, there would have been some reservations. Kind of like the Cubs getting Aroldis Chapman for their World Series run a couple years ago, right? It's like, wow, love the pitcher. Not sure how I feel about the guy.
Yeah, so just to go back to the trial, to kind of clear that up a little bit. From what I understand, it seems like once her name got leaked out to the public, she was receiving not only death threats but hate mail, and it seems like her character was taking a hit from this, and her reputation wasn't good. So after spending over $200,000 preparing for a trial, they dismissed all the charges against Kobe Bryant because she was unwilling to testify. But then it says before the case was scheduled to go to trial, his accuser filed a civil lawsuit against Bryant over the incident. The two sides ultimately settled that lawsuit, with specific terms of the settlement being undisclosed to the public. Bryant did, however, issue the following statement through his attorney as part of an agreement with the accuser to dismiss the sexual assault charge. So there's about a three paragraph.
Okay, so it was a civil suit. It was the same thing as Derrick Rose exactly. Last year. Okay.
You brought up a couple players too, and like, I'm looking at the roster that was currently constructed for 2004, 2005, and you look at Eddie Curry, 22 years old. He was coming off a season where he was averaging 16.1 points per game and 5 rebounds. He was only 22 years old. It was really his first legitimate shot at trying to build the Twin Towers sort of thing with Tyson Chandler. Tyson Chandler, exactly going along that line, 22 years old. He only started in 10 games in this season, but you had him. You had a Ben Gordon at 21 years old only. You had Luol Deng at 19 years old. You had Kirk Heinrich at 24 years old. So I was curious to see what pieces would have brought back Kobe. Like, what pieces would have the Bulls had to have sent to the Lakers in order to acquire Kobe? And then who would Kobe ultimately be able to get the best out? Maybe somebody that we didn't think of, or could he have altered somebody's career? Maybe say like a Eddie Curry. Maybe I don't know if he could have altered Eddie Curry's career at all, but somebody like Tyson Chandler could have been a completely different star and could have stayed in Chicago had Kobe Bryant been here. Chris Duhon could have been a different player. Ben Gordon, I don't know what we would have got out of Ben Gordon at that point. Kirk Heinrich, same thing. So it's curious when you talk about a legend in Kobe Bryant's on court skills and what he could have done back in 04 when you did have all these talented young players that the Bulls were trying to build up. It would definitely would have been interesting in a time where really Kobe was the rising star, and had Shaq stayed with LA,
probably would have changed the landscape of the NBA in those years. And because when you think about those, the 2003-ish through 2010, like after the Lakers' first three-peat in 2001 and 2, I mean, those were kind of like the Spurs years, where the Spurs would like win it every other year. You had that Detroit Pistons team with Chauncey Billups and Ben Wallace and Tayshaun Prince and Rip Hamilton that were, you know, a great sort of reincarnation of the defense first bad boy Pistons, and they were able to win one in 2004. You had Shaq going to Miami and helping D. Wade win the first one for Miami in 06. And then you had that Celtics trio of KG, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen with a young Rondo winning one in 08. And then it was back to Kobe with Powell as his sidekick in 2009-2010. So, like, there was never really a true dynasty in that stretch of years. If anything, it was the fact that the Spurs basically won every other year. They won in 03, they won in 05, they won in 07. But there was never anything between the Lakers repeating in 2009-2010, going back to their three-peat in the early 2000s. No one team had a dominant dynasty-type kind of stretch. So you wonder if Kobe went and played somewhere else, and if that somewhere else was Chicago, how that may have changed the landscape. And, you know, who knows what would have happened.
Could you imagine a LeBron and Kobe ultimate battle, especially in LeBron's young years in that Eastern Conference, just a battle that would be going on between those two guys, which could have been for a long time. It could have been 5-6 years of just straight, not only playing during the regular season, making it a battle, but then in the meeting in the playoffs too. I'll just say the last thing to wrap this kind of story up. I thought it was kind of a cool and an interesting story. Obviously, there was always rumors around here, floating around here, that Kobe Bryant could potentially be a Chicago Bull. It never turned out that way. But I certainly loved it when there was rumors going around it, just because of the pure player that he was. But I'm glad that they never traded for him in 2007, because that would have never brought us Derrick Rose in 2008. So I was thankful that they never pulled the trigger on that one. But in 04, it could have drastically changed the landscape. And the one thing, too, is like him coming here, I would assume guys like there would be a package, something along the lines of like either Eddie Curry or Tyson Chandler to go. Ben Gordon would probably have gone, maybe even Luol Deng. I would assume that there would have been type of package to send some of those young guys that way. The only thing that I had kind of a question mark about is how Kobe Bryant would have played with, say, Eddie Curry at that time, because he's just coming off a terrible relationship with his center in Shaquille O'Neal, and Eddie Curry didn't have the best attitude when it comes to being a teammate, being in that locker room. So I was kind of curious how that would have played out too. So very interesting, though, I thought, and could have changed the entire dynamic of what we knew as the Chicago Bulls basketball history over the last 15 years.
Yeah, and I mean, just mentioning who Kobe Bryant was at that time, how I, you know, said this, you know, that would have been getting Kobe in his prime. So in the season in LA after Shaq left, 2005-2006, Kobe won the scoring title averaging 35.4 points per game. A 27-year-old Kobe averaging 35.5 points per game on 45% shooting and 34.7% shooting downtown, which is the third best three-point shooting percentage he's ever had over the span of his great career. And then the year following that, 31.6 points per game. So that was prime, I'm going to score, and I'm going to score as many points as I need to for us to win these games. That was like the Kobe as a late 80s Michael Jordan in his prime, leading the league in scoring, leading his team in scoring every night. Bulls may have had that guy on their team. Would have been crazy to watch.
So, all right, let's get to our weekly segment here in this week in Bulls history. So, Matt, I have one in particular that I want to talk about. I know you tweeted out some of the videos. A game that brings us back to 2010, and I thought this was an interesting game because this was a turning point in this 2009-2010 season. It goes all the way back to an overtime win against Portland, a 115-111 win for the Chicago Bulls that pushed them to 31-27 over a pretty solid Blazers team at the time. If you remember, Brandon Roy was on this team, LaMarcus Aldridge, young Nicholas Batum as well. So in this game, I thought was interesting was this was kind of one of Derrick Rose's classic games. He had 33 points. He had four assists and only two rebounds, but the 33 points weighed heavy because he was 15 for 25 from the field. Luol Deng scored another 23 points to add to that on 8 of 13 shooting. He chipped in with 7 rebounds and 2 assists and 3 steals in this game. Another person that was important for the Bulls here was Kirk Heinrich with 17 points. Not a whole lot of passing. I even see this like in these games when we're even looking back at like the late 2000s and early into the 10s. So you don't see a whole lot of high assist numbers from guys. And that's what you kind of see with the Bulls team. But obviously between Derek, Luol Deng, and Kirk Heinrich, they were able to pull off the win against Portland in overtime. But the turning point of this game, the reason why I chose this game, is not only it happened during this week, but the Bulls were in a playoff hunt at this point, and they ended up going on a 10-game losing streak and not winning for almost a month. Their next win not coming till March 22nd, 2010.
We all felt like with the core of Rose and Deng and an emerging young center in Joakim, with those other, you know, role players like Kirk and Taj, that like this was an interesting team that was building on potential, and they had all that cap space to play with, right? So it was like, okay, well, Derrick Rose is an emerging star in this league. Rookie of the year goes right from rookie of the year to all-star, and we have perhaps one of the best and most special young, you know, new gen point guards that can do all these amazing things on the floor. We need some other scoring pieces to put around him, and that's, as I mentioned previously, the summer when they tried to get any combination of or all of Wade, Bosch, and LeBron, and they didn't. Clearly, we're not a talented enough group in this 2009-10 season, the last season with Vinny. And I feel like everybody kind of didn't necessarily expect them to make as big of a jump as they did. They took everybody by surprise with that 20-win improvement into their following season, which was the first season under Tibbs. It's funny that I think it's kind of It was a given that they were going to go away from Vinny after this season because of, you know, there were multiple reports about how he and John Paxson were clashing and there was actually a physical altercation that happened. I'm sure most Bulls fans remember that. But you wonder, say the rest of the stuff stays the same. Derrick Rose has his amazing emergence into the youngest MVP in league history. The same thing happens with adding Carlos Boozer and missing out on the other big name free agents. But they, for some reason, say like the fight with Paxson stuff doesn't happen and they keep Vinny. Do you think the Bulls have that same 20-win improvement from going from, you know, 41-41 to 62-20 if they don't fire Vinny and hire Tibbs? Do you think that still happens?
Probably not, just because Tibbs was commanded as a defensive coach, and that's the one thing I felt like the Bulls lacked in, especially in this era. And when you had a young Luol Deng, or when you had sort of that veteran presence from Luol Deng, you had a young Derrick Rose, you had a young Joakim Noah too, and then you talk about Taj Gibson as well, and then Kirk Heinrich was kind of the captain too, as well as a veteran. But you talked about the playoff run too that they made right there at the end. They won one of those games, a game in which LeBron James scored 39 points and the Bulls pulled out a squeaker of a victory, 108-106, back in the 2010 playoffs. But I think Vinny Del Negro's time was sort of up. He wasn't well liked with the media either. He played that kind of weird role where I know he got a job after he left the Bulls and went to be the Clippers head coach for a short time, but he was just, I felt like he was always weird, and he was kind of like Scott Skiles in that way too. He just didn't know how to talk to the media. It was just kind of very bizarre. And then obviously, like you said, the fight with John Paxson probably didn't help his tenure. And then with Tom Thibodeau coming up and rising with the Celtics and being like that number one coaching candidate out there to grab, it seemed like it was a perfect storm at the end of the season.
Yeah. And speaking of that following season, let's go there for our next episode of This Week in Bulls History. This is one that I'm sure a lot of Bulls fans will remember fondly, a 93-89 win over the visiting Miami Heat. So this was the following season when that trio of Wade, Bosch, and Braun were all there, the Heatles, the Hollywood as Hell team. That was, you know, the Bulls were a thorn in their side all the way through that Eastern Conference Finals series. But, you look at this game, a great balance of effort given by Carlos Boozer with a near double-double, 16 and 9 rebounds. Luol Deng chipped in with 20 points and 10 rebounds and dished out 5 assists. And Derrick Rose, a tough shooting night, just 9 of 24, but he did go 7 of 8 from the free throw line, 6 assists, 5 boards for 26 points, and a couple of big buckets down the stretch from D. Rose. And of course, he had that great drive and dish. Drew the double team of Dwayne Wade. LeBron was guarding him one-on-one. Wade comes over to help. D. Rose kicks it out to a wide-open Luol in the corner, who buries the go-ahead three on the Bulls' final possession to put them in front of Miami. Just a great atmosphere at the United Center. Definitely, you know, so this is like mid to late February. Everybody's gearing up for the fact that, so coming into this game, the Bulls were 38-17 and Miami was 42-15. So everybody was like, okay, these are the two juggernauts in the Eastern Conference, right? These are guys, this could be a conference finals preview. It ended up being that it was a conference finals preview. And of all of the teams that Miami was stomping over in the regular season, I'm pretty sure the Bulls went undefeated against Miami in that regular season. And everybody was saying, oh my gosh, like this young, scrappy Bulls team with their MVP Derrick Rose might actually be able to knock off Miami. And the Bulls had home court. First two games in Chicago, they blew out the Heat in game one. I don't know. It reminds us of a simpler time before, you know, there's like, you know, BC and AD in the giant, you know, span of human existence. I feel like as Bulls fans over the last 10 years, it's like pre-ACL and post-ACL. And games like that, even though it's a regular season game, the hype around the underdog Bulls beating that juggernaut Miami team at the United Center, just like, you know, I don't know about you, Jordan, but I felt like a significant championship window was just opening there. And when they would win close, dramatic games like that, you started to think about the old days and the Jordan days and how much fun it was to be a Bulls fan when that team was making noise and gearing up for a deep playoff run.
Yeah, this was a fun time just because I think the most important thing of this all is this opened up the door to the Bulls Heat rivalry over the next 4 or 5 years. Just the fact that LeBron didn't choose Chicago after being touted as one of the favorites to possibly land him. The fact that he sort of stole Chris Bosh away or Dwayne Wade and lured those guys to all play in Miami, like that whole conjuring of those three stars and ending up in Miami kind of fueled that fire for Bulls fans in terms of what they expected from the season. You were right about the fact that they did sweep the series. They only played Miami twice in this season, but beat them both times, once in January and then once in this game in February. But like I said, the most important part, I think, of this all is it opened up a great window of basketball and rivalry with a team that I felt like the Bulls were longing for a new rival. I felt like I get it. Back in the 90s, the Knicks were a rival. The Lakers were a rival. The Celtics, the big name teams, the marketable teams were your rival. But really, you were looking for some of the grittiness from a rivalry that was sparked by sort of animosity from Chicago fans because LeBron didn't choose here with young Derrick Rose. Just set up for great basketball and great drama and great storylines for the next 4 or 5 years. So that's kind of what I missed from that. And I'm hopefully with this new young core, maybe there's other new young cores that are rising with the Bulls and doing the same on the same similar paths that ultimately end up becoming rivals of the Bulls once we sort of get more competitive. And I'm even looking up north too. I feel like Milwaukee could definitely be a team that could become a newfound rival with the Bulls once the Bulls sort of take that turn.
If they put some other quality pieces around Antetokounmpo, I mean, the Bucks could become the new Heat, so to speak, as far as a younger, hungry Bulls team chasing somebody who's above them. Milwaukee hasn't made as much of that big step as some people thought they would make this year, and even fired Jason Kidd midway through the season. But that would be a great one if the Bulls and Bucks can develop a perennial playoff matchup kind of rivalry. Or we'll see what the Pistons do in the coming seasons. And obviously, if the Cavs do in fact manage to convince LeBron to stay after making all those trades before the deadline, yeah, he's 33 going on 34, but I mean, unless until somebody knocks those Cavs off, if the Bulls make their way back into playoff relevancy, that's the number one team, right? That's the number one team you want to play. That's the number one team you want to beat.
Yeah, I think it just would be a fun rivalry too, just because of how close it terms of geographics it is. It's like on that border of where Bulls fans and Bucks fans sort of meet, and it would just, I feel like that sort of rivalry, and obviously everybody's anticipating Giannis becoming the face of the NBA once LeBron takes that step down, and obviously there's argument that Kevin Durant could take that too, but that Milwaukee Bucks Bulls rivalry should be there. It should have already been in place, but the Bucks haven't been very good over the last, I would say, 20 years or so. So that sort of, I think, flaked a lot of things. And with the Milwaukee market being kind of a smaller market and being like the little brother to Chicago, I think that hurt it in that terms. But I mean, if the Bulls can become rising stars and like Lauri Markkanen or Chris Dunn or Zach LaVine or whoever they get in the draft ends up becoming a star, and playing off the factor of where Giannis is going to be in his prime at that time, where the Bulls are expecting to be a competitive team back in the East, I think this could be a fun rivalry.
Absolutely. All right. I got one more. Do you want me to do 91 or 94?
Let's go 94.
All right. February 23rd, 1994, MJ's out practicing his swing somewhere, and the Scottie Pippen-led Bulls beat the Golden State Warriors 123-100. Funny little anecdotes, of course, that mid-90s Warriors team featured the likes of Avery Johnson, you know, 92 Dream Team member Chris Mullin, a young Latrell Sprewell, a rookie Chris Webber. Also, guess who they had coming off their bench? Judd Bushler, member of the Bulls' second three-peat team. But here's why I picked this game. Shout out to former interim head coach and current Bulls assistant coach, Pete Myers, who had the unenviable job of replacing Michael Jordan as the Bulls' starting shooting guard after MJ left to play baseball. This was a night where Pete Myers scored his NBA career high, 26 points on 10 of 17 shooting, also dished out 9 assists and grabbed 8 rebounds for a near triple-double. And the Bulls beat up the Golden State Warriors 123-100. Pete Myers is a name that has been in and around Bulls basketball for a long time. And this was the night where he scored his career high.
Well, Pete Myers probably will be here for a long time, too, considering how loyal Jerry Reinsdorf is to his entire staff, especially when he's leaving all those guys on after Tibbs left. So that's pretty funny. Jordan-less Bulls team too, always fun to reminisce about. And I heard somebody trying to make the argument too on Twitter. I saw this a couple days ago that even with Michael leaving there, that Scottie Pippen and those guys could still have won a championship. And if that career of his baseball career had extended on, that they felt like that Scottie Pippen could have found a way to win one or maybe two championships with that team alone. I don't know about that. Like, let's be honest.
I'm sorry. I don't buy it.
I don't either.
No way.
Not with how competitive the entire NBA was with the stars that were filled across the league, across the 90s, and the paths that the Bulls had to carve out in order to get those championships, even with Michael.
I mean, you had the Penny and Shaq magic. You had Ewing and Starks Knicks. You had Alonzo Mourning's Heat. Like, those were some good teams in the mid-90s in the Eastern Conference. You know, and Pippen, to his credit, did take a step forward. He wanted to be the guy, and when Jordan left, his numbers went up. You know, his usage, his scoring, his field goal attempts, it all went up for Scottie because he did get the opportunity to be the guy. But as much as Bulls fans all fondly remember Scottie, and as much as, you know, he's still to this day more involved with the organization, you know, MJ's off running the Hornets. Scottie's an ambassador. He's sitting courtside at most home games, and he's stuck around more than MJ has as a face of the franchise following the dynasty. But he was a Hall of Fame caliber player, but he was not a number one player on a championship team. Unless the other player around him or players around him were like 1A and 1B caliber. Like, those teams without, or guys, so 93-94 without MJ, because remember, MJ came back late in the 94-95 season, like in March or whatever it was, and then the Bulls lost with MJ in the playoffs to Orlando in 95. But that one season, 93-94, that was a good team. They still had Horace and they still had BJ. And they inserted BJ into the starting lineup for John Paxson. And we're actually playing like what more closely resembles a modern, fast-paced NBA offense. I was watching some of the highlights from this game where Pete Myers was scoring his career high. The Bulls were running up and down the court. When MJ's not playing half-court basketball and going ISO, that 93-94 Bulls team loves to run, especially with BJ in there instead of John Paxson. And it was a fun team to watch. It was still a 50-win team in the NBA. But championship caliber? Obviously not. They didn't even get to the conference finals without MJ that 93-94 season.
All right, with that, I want to spend the last part of the show talking about something important. And it's a conversation that's going to continue probably through the summer until something happens. But I feel like it's an important conversation right now with obviously no Bulls basketball going on till later this week, that I felt like this was an opportune time to kind of talk about this with you, Matt, and kind of compare some things in order to get a better gauge of what the Bulls are going to be willing to spend, what the Bulls are going to have to pay Zach LaVine in order to stay for long term this summer. So right off the bat, let me just ask you this plain and simple. Do you think Zach LaVine's getting a max contract?
I mean, there are a lot of different ways that you can go about defining what a max contract is. What do you mean a max contract?
A max contract that puts him in the top 20 players, top 20 paid players right now in the NBA.
Maybe somewhere towards the bottom of that list. I mean, like, maybe somewhere between 15 and 20. I guess it also depends on what other new contracts might be handed out this season to some free agents, notably LeBron. But I think he's going to get a multi-year extension from the Bulls, and I think he will be paid very handsomely, but I think it might come just a little shy of that quote-unquote max contract.
So I was thinking this too, because I was trying to dive in just from the numbers that he's played in these 14 games and kind of thinking about players that have similar skill sets around the same age as Zach LaVine, kind of seeing what they were commanding. And I came up with a few handful of different players in different tiers, and we can kind of discuss this. So obviously players playing in his position right now, you can include Victor Oladipo and Bradley Beal and CJ McCollum and Evan Fournier and also Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. So I just kind of wanted to run through the list of shooting guards and what they're making this year, and where do you see Zach LaVine falling with this? So I'm going to start all the way at the bottom, where I think the lowest amount of money that I think Zach LaVine would probably command is this, is probably $16.5 million a year for 4 or 5 years. So that puts you at the 16th highest paid shooting guard in the NBA, and that's Tim Hardaway Jr. So remember, we saw Tim Hardaway get that 4-year, $72 million, $75 million deal just last summer. Then you go up to Evan Fournier, you get to Evan Turner's, the Kentavious Caldwell-Popes. You've got Wesley Matthews making $18 million this year. You got Butler making the $19.3 million this year. You've got Alan Crabb making $19.3 million. And then you get to the top eight, where it's Victor Oladipo at $21 million, Nicholas Batum at $22.4 million, J.J. Redick at $23 million. And then you get to your top five players, which is what I was kind of talking about with the C.J. McCollum and Bradley Beal deals. The funny thing about that is, C.J. McCollum and Bradley Beal are the 19th and 20th highest paid players in the NBA currently right now. I don't think Zach LaVine's getting that money. I don't care how well he plays through the last 20, whatever it is, 25 games of the season. There's no way the Bulls should commit that much money to Zach LaVine right now. Like, I get it. It's a young, talented, rising star in the league, but also at the same time, you have the ACL that the Bulls can kind of leverage, use that as part of the leverage. The mere fact that the Bulls have the leverage to that, they are one of the few teams that can actually spend money. So do you see Zach LaVine falling somewhere into this range of like 20, like anywhere between 16 and 20 million? Because that's where I feel like I would be comfortable giving Zach LaVine a 4-year deal at like $18 million, and it doesn't completely kill your salary cap. At the same time, you can build and improve on that.
Yeah, I think I would be okay with that. You know, obviously, what we see from LaVine in the closing months of this regular season is going to go a long way in determining how okay I feel about the Bulls giving him a multi-year near max level contract, because hopefully we see the Zach LaVine that we saw in Minnesota before his ACL tear, and continuous improvement and potential and upside for a kid who's still only, what, 22 years old. You want to be convinced that he's worth that investment. I think if the Bulls were to ink him to a deal, you know, somewhere along the lines of what you said, like, you know, $18 million per, I'd be okay with that. I don't think Zach is going to be necessarily coming to the table very greedy, because he knows the situation he's in. Like, he doesn't have a whole lot of leverage, he'll have only played a third of a season after being traded. I think he and the Bulls, you know, they didn't make the new deal before the season started. Nobody was surprised by that, but he and the Bulls front office have collectively said and independently said, we're all on the same page, we're going to keep LaVine, we'll come to a deal that works for everybody. But I think, you know, LaVine's no dummy. He knows that it would behoove him and benefit the organization if he takes something slightly less than the max, so that the Bulls still have this financial flexibility and can remain one of the few teams in the league over the next couple of seasons with that financial flexibility to add some other pieces to turn this Bulls rebuild from being a who knows how long this will take rebuild to they can go back to being a playoff team in another season or two.
See, this is where I set the benchmark. I think I set the benchmark at Victor Oladipo. Take away what you've seen this year with Victor Oladipo, because that was before he had signed his contract extension for 4 years at $85 million. This was in OKC coming off his season, which I want to read you his stats compared to what Zach LaVine's done so far this season. So last year, Victor Oladipo in his fourth year as a 24-year-old had 15.9 points per game. He was averaging about 2.6 assists per game, 4.3 rebounds per game. He was shooting at a clip of 44.2%, and from three, he was shooting 36.1%. So you compare that to what Zach LaVine's done so far this season. I know small sample size, 14 games with the Bulls, but you can also toss in LaVine's stats pre-ACL injury if you want to get a little bit bigger of a sample size. But in 25 minutes per game, Zach LaVine's doing 16.9 points per game, 2.6 assists per game, 4.5 rebounds, 39.9% shooting, and 37.1 3-point percentage, and a 46.2% efficient field goal, a true shooting percentage of 51%, and his box plus minus for the season is -1.8. So I feel like those stats are pretty similar to what Victor Oladipo got pre-breaking out with the Indiana Pacers this season. So honestly, I know it sounds great for the Bulls, for Bulls fans to say that, you know, $16 to $18 million or $16 to $20 million a year for the next 4 or 5 years for Zach LaVine. Hey, that's great if you're going to do $100 million for 5 years. I think honestly he might get more than that, and that's just considering what Victor Oladipo got, looking at some of the other players that are highly paid and some of the other guys that have similar stats to him. Like Tim Hardaway, if you look at his stats from just this year too, he's around the same ballpark as Zach LaVine is. And obviously we can talk about the pros and cons to both of their games and their styles, but would you be aggravated at all if the Bulls decided to give him somewhere north of $21 million a year for 4 or 5 years?
I mean, I wouldn't be doing cartwheels in my living room, that's for sure. I mean, yeah, no, obviously I want the Bulls front office to play hardball if at all possible, and give LaVine something less than a max deal. Because I'm still slightly skeptical, or hesitant at least I would say, that he is worth that kind of money. I mean, among those names you rattled off, you said that Alan Crabb is making the same amount of money as Jimmy Butler. Like, in what world does that make sense? You don't want to be right. A team that makes that mistake. And look, like a lot of teams were interested in Alan Crabb's services, what was that, 2 summers ago. I actually thought he would be a great piece to add to play alongside Jimmy Butler. But now, I mean, that contract looks awful.
Right.
He is straight up not worth that kind of money. So you are afraid that the Bulls sign LaVine to something upwards of $20 million a season, and it doesn't pan out, and he's not the franchise-changing core piece that we all hope he is right now. So, I mean, really, where we sit right now, it's hard to say what kind of money Zach LaVine is worth. And that time will come at some point this summer when we all hear what the numbers are on that contract. And I think you're probably right. It's probably going to be a little bit higher than Bulls fans all want it to be. But so you're going to sit there and say, okay, well, the other option was making this guy being a core piece of the Jimmy Butler trade and then turning around and letting him leave after half a season when he still hasn't even reached his prime. How dumb would that be? So it's like, all right, well, here's the contract. Here's the situation. Let's all hope, you know, let's all hope you're as good as we want you to be. But let's, you know, I think of what's the line that President Whitmore says to Jeff Goldblum's character in Independence Day. It's like, you do your thing, you figure out your code, and let's all pray that you're as smart as we all hope you are. That's basically where the Bulls are and Bulls fans are with this Zach LaVine contract right now. We've got another month or so to figure out where he is in his recovery and what kind of NBA ceiling he has. And they're going to have to sign him to a multi-year deal. And we're all just going to have to cross our fingers and hope that he's worth that money. There's nothing else we can really do.
And I don't think getting bent out of shape about how much money he's going to get paid. Like, he's obviously going to get paid. That's the clear cut decision here. Like, he's not going to make supermax money or anything like that. But like you had said, it's kind of troubling. And I guess you have to put it into perspective of what the all of a sudden the spending spree that went on for the last 2 seasons in free agency, what that turned out, and how NBA teams have kind of turned and looked at that. Like we have always said, like looking at Jan Mahini, or like you had said, Alan Crabb, or some of these other guys, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope getting these big contracts because the cap increased. I think teams are starting to look at that now and saying, you know, what probably throwing money at guys for the sake of throwing money at guys is probably not the best option. But also, we're at the same time, we're talking about young Zach LaVine here. So that's a little bit different situation. I personally think what's gonna happen for the Bulls, if they can find a way to somehow get LaVine to commit to a contract similar to what Victor Oladipo got, maybe a little bit higher with the incentive of having that front loaded. So by the time that maybe Zach LaVine's on his fourth or fifth year of his deal, when you're at the point where you're hoping that you can continue to compete and you're at the top of the East, saying three, four years down the road, that you have the ability to still spend money and stretch those out and be able to sign a max guy. Like, you can find ways to kind of maneuver this and make this play into a way where you're paying Zach LaVine now, and maybe he'll help you out towards the back part of his contract when he's in his prime, and that'll be a valuable deal. Some things that I wanted to throw off to you, because I came up with a list of pros and cons for the Bulls' negotiation skills this summer with Zach LaVine and how this will play into the amount of money that he might get. So I'm going to list you off the pros first, and you tell me if there's anything that should be added to this or anything that should be taken off. So the pros for the Bulls is he's coming off an ACL injury. This helps Bulls majorly in negotiation, where they're only going to get probably about a 35 or 40 game sample of him this season. Sounds like LaVine is committed to staying in Chicago. He likes being in Chicago. The big market helps. His defense is a major hole in his game. It separates him from being good and being elite. The thing that helps the Bulls in this case is he's 22 years old. It'll help. This will be his first big ass contract. He was the main piece in the Jimmy Butler deal. So for the Bulls, this could be played as a pro or a con. The final one that I had is not many teams in the league have money to spend this season, which will probably handcuff Zach LaVine slightly. So anything in there that you would take off or anything that you would add in terms of Bulls negotiations going this summer?
As far as pros and cons for Zach LaVine's situation,
For the Bulls, in terms of having to deal to find ways to be able to leverage themselves and not have to overspend or overpay like we were just talking about.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think you pretty much covered it there. The other thing that I would add, and it's something that I've brought up before, and I feel like a lot of Bulls fans just ignore this thought or feel like it's not relevant, but in my opinion, it very much is. When you're worrying about what kind of money the Bulls are going to give Zach LaVine on a multi-year deal, as the Bulls are starting this rebuild, and it's hopefully going to be a rebuild on the fly that won't take several seasons languishing in the bottom of the NBA standings and somewhere near the top of the lottery, especially as the lottery rules begin to change. Would you rather pay Zach LaVine somewhere between 18 and 20 million a season for the next 4 or 5 years, and we'll see what his NBA upside is? Or would you rather pay a 28 to 33-year-old Jimmy Butler collectively somewhere around $250 million? Because that's the situation and that's the decision that the Bulls front office was facing last summer. Did they want to pay Jimmy Butler, assuming that he qualified for it, which he very likely could and will do, that max, like super max designated player exception contract to stick around and be the best player on the Bulls team that would most likely be anywhere from a 3 seed to an 8 seed that would not really ever legitimately contend for a championship over the course of those next 4 or 5 years? Because to me, making this bit of a toss-up, bit of a question mark investment in Zach LaVine is still a safer, I don't know about safer, but a more logical bet, a more logical move than has already played a lot of minutes, has already very old legs underneath him, Jimmy Butler, even more money on an annual basis to play in the twilight and exit of his prime years. To me, the LaVine investment might be a little bit scarier than that Jimmy Butler DPE investment, but at least we know it's not a whole lot of money on a guy playing past his prime on a team that's going nowhere. To me, that was the most defensible thing about the Jimmy Butler trade.
Like, I tend to forget about that point too, even with all the hype around the guys that we did get in the Butler trade, and we talk about it all the time, but I forget about that aspect of it too, is like if they didn't deal Butler there, they would end up having to face, like you were saying, a $220, $230, $240, $50 million contract at the budding end of his prime. So that's a good point to bring up too as well.
Which would have been backloaded, and they would have been paying him something crazy like $35 right. million dollars when he's 32 or 33 years old. Wouldn't have made any sense.
So here are the cons that I had for the Bulls front office. Obviously, the very first one is it's Gar Forman and John Paxson doing the negotiating. They haven't had the best reputation for negotiating great contracts across the league. This is a place where it's known around the league for players that it's difficult to recruit guys to come here, high star playing guys. So that's a con for the Bulls front office in terms of selling LaVine to stay here long term. The other thing too, this is a small worry, but I don't see it as a huge problem, is other teams that do have the money to match and maybe are intrigued by Zach LaVine might be in there just throwing offers out there to drive the price up for the Bulls. Other than that, I didn't really have any other cons. So the Bulls are, I feel like the Bulls are sitting in a situation where they already knew what they were going to have to pay him, the ballpark of what they were going to have to pay him. And it's going to more be just kind of breaking it down and seeing if they can squeeze anything less or be a little bit savvy in order to keep Zach LaVine happy, comfortable, and also getting the better end of the deal for the Bulls in terms of flexibility. The only thing that I think that scares me the most is the desperation that the Bulls might have, say if other teams are interested in LaVine this summer. I'm not sure if there will be, but say there are other teams and it becomes a bidding war, the desperation to keep him in Chicago because of that Butler deal, I think scares me a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be a huge problem in the end.
I think based on everything we've heard, based on everything I've heard, there should be no concern from Bulls fans about whether or not they can convince LaVine to stay. Some concern about whether or not this front office has what it takes at the negotiating table to get the better end of the deal and also to bring in other guys to build around this young core that they have, convincing free agents to come here, as you mentioned. Those are some concerns. But when it comes to Zach LaVine, he's going to stay in Chicago. They are going to sign him to a multi-year extension this summer. I have no doubts about that. And like I said before, it's just a matter of hoping that it's not the richest contract that LaVine can get, and it's something a little less than that to give the Bulls a little bit of flexibility, and also because you still really don't know quite what you have in him. So the less you have to invest in him at this unknown stage, the better.
Zach LaVine's per 36-minute stats real quick. 23.9 points per game, 6.4 rebounds per game, 3.6 assists per game, and 1.5 steals on a clip of 39.9% shooting and 37% from the field. So interesting. I'm curious now that he's going to probably get the full treatment now here in the last 25 games of the season, with the exception of playing back-to-backs. Pretty much we're going to be able to get to see what it's like to get LaVine, Markkanen, and Dunn out there all together for the last 25 games, see what's cooking with those guys. So I'm definitely excited.
Yeah, and hopefully in the first quarters and the third quarters, but they should be sitting and taking a rest in all of the fourth quarters from here on out.
Well, that's good about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. If you're so kind enough, leave us a review, 5-star review there. Tell us your feedback in the review on iTunes or any of your podcast providers. We love it and appreciate it. Takes 30 seconds to do. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. As always, we're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live there on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Tomorrow, special guest, we have David Haw from Chicago Tribune coming on to discuss all things Chicago Bulls, so that should be a fun and exciting interview for us. But for Jordan and Matt, we are out. Have a great night.
Yeah, you were late getting over there, but early for a poster.
I'm one of the best bowlers in my region.
Money Longer, Lil Uzi Vert.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.